Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day. Thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb, in for Colin Cowherd. Nick Swisher is going to join us in a moment. I always say this, Swisher makes coffee nervous. All right? Ask him about Francisco Lindor, who signed for a paltry $341 million. Got to talk some Doyers, some Padres, some Yankees, and Angels, right? Why not? What the hell? Got a good manager. You got Mike Trout. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. All right. Nick Swisher in a moment. Big news in college athletics. Roy Williams announces his retirement. Roy Williams, 903 wins, 3 national titles. Guy won 80% of his games at Kansas. Neither won 80% of his, probably if he would have quit a couple years ago, would have won 80% of his games in North Carolina. Crazy. His success is remarkable. You know, what's fascinating is I'll get people who will troll me today. Like, Gottlieb, you missed it by like 10 years. It actually was 4 years ago. I was sitting on the set at CBS, and Roy Williams had had a spout with Vertigo. And which he has, it comes and goes. He needed, I don't remember, his knee or hip replacement or both. I think it was dual knee replacement surgery. One of his closest friends had passed away. And he was very kind of open and emotional about it. And if you've ever been around Roy Williams in the summer, you know that, like, he rolls up in Vegas and he rolls deep. Like, he brings a couple of his buddies with him. And they go and they watch ball games and they recruit the best kids and they go play golf. And then they come back at night and watch the best kids. And the next day they go play golf. And then they hop in the Gulf Stream and they go to another spot and they go do it again. Like, that's how. And when you lose one of your friends that you travel with, and you know, and at some point you just like, how much of this can I do? So I was on the set and I said to Seth Davis, say, listen, there's a lot of rumors in college basketball that if they win the national championship, this could be a year where Roy Williams walks away. That was the year, by the way, that they lost to Villanova on a last-second shot. Would have won a national championship. But I said, like, look, they get the Final Four, they win a national championship. Do you just walk away? And by the way, since that moment, they've never really been the same. Because the NCAA stuff does wear you down. And the way in which recruiting has changed does wear you down. You know, he had Cole Anthony last year, and Cole's a very talented player, but not one that's super easy to play with. And they took some grad transfers as well, right? Like, that didn't really work. Like, they were just not good the last couple of years. But they had good young players. They've started to kind of rebuild it, and they look like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. But this is not me saying I was right then. It's me saying I wasn't that crazy wrong then. That everybody sees their time and just decides, like, do you want to do this forever? Or do I want to go play golf and be wherever I want to be and not have to do conference calls or Zoom meetings or, you know, he's got more money and championships than anybody ever thought possible. He's already in the Hall of Fames, both of them. Like, what more do you actually need? You know? And the thing about college basketball, and there's been people, well, why won't Brad Stevens, why didn't he take the Indiana job? Would Brad Stevens take the North Carolina job? You know what the answer is? No, hell no. Like, in the NBA, it is more of a grind in terms of travel. Now, we have to at least balance that out with they stay in the absolute nicest hotels in the world. Like, in the world. I have a friend in the NBA who was like, I was like, what's the travel like? And he was like, have you ever stayed at the Peninsula Hotel in Chicago? I was like, no. He's like, I did, and I never wanted to leave. It was the greatest thing I've ever, it was amazing. And then when they get time off, they get time off. Like, when they shut it down for the summer, like, they shut it down. With basketball, this stuff never ends. think about this right now. If you have a basketball program, you're Roy Williams. Okay. So had he decided to return for another year, first you got to re-recruit the players you already have. What? Yes. You got to recruit the guys you already have and beg them, the ones you want to stay and the ones you want to go, you got to find a way to delicately go like, you know, look, we'd love to have you, but if there's a place you can go and find more minutes maybe than the 0 minutes you would get here. That's right. That's how you have to. Then you got to manage. Okay. Now I got high school recruits, but many of them didn't have a full high school season. What does that look like? Then you got the transfer portal. So now you got to recruit guys that, that you've never seen worked out anything before. You just saw them on tape, talked to their high school coach, talked to their AU guy, and the whole thing is, or you got what, like, you got a pension, you got millions in the bank, you're head coach emeritus, you always have an office in North Carolina. The only thing surprising is he did it now, which allows them to have a national search, as opposed to how Dean Smith did it, which was right before the season. Here, make sure Bill Guthridge gets the job. And it worked to two Final Fours, but it didn't work to keep people happy. Oh, that and Chris Beard's the head coach at Texas now, which makes total sense. Texas guy, came from Texas Tech. He's a marvelous head coach. That is an incredible hire. Chris Del Conte's just like, all right, we'll wait till April 1st and the buyout goes down. All right, here's all the money. Now give me my coach. That's the kind of money that Nick Swisher demands if you want him to coach or manage your baseball team. He joins us fresh off of an hour of yoga, an hour of tennis, and I believe an hour of Pilates. Swish, how are you?
Yo, DG. What's up, brother? How you doing, baby?
Good. You were born too soon and at the wrong position. You should have been Francisco Lindor. We all should have been Francisco Lindor.
Oh, man. I mean, if we were all so lucky.
Okay, so, I mean, I feel like people are going to say, well, this is a deal. It's not $400 million. 10 years, 341. Does that look like too much money for you?
Woo-hoo, man, that sounds good to me, bro. I'll take that. I'll take that in a heartbeat. And but, you know, here's the deal, man. Anytime these monster contracts come up, it's hard for people to fathom that sort of money. So they're always going to say they're not worth it. At the end of the day, listen, this is the market that we're in right now. This is the money that these guys are getting paid. And at the end of the day, listen, the collective bargaining agreement is up after the end of this season. So I can guarantee you, come 2022, you're going to see players either not playing or you're going to be seeing them make more money because the owners haven't given them enough. So I think for myself, listen, man, Steve Cohen has done a tremendous job over there with the Mets, man. Listen, all the guys that he's brought over, he signed Francisco Lindor to a 10-year contract. Listen, that's the type of guy that can transform your organization. I saw him as a young kid with the Cleveland Indians, and I knew he was going to be a superstar. To see him do what he's doing right now, I could not be more proud of him. I know he is extremely happy in New York. And if I'm a New York Mets fan, I'm thinking to myself, wow, man, like Steve Cohen, he ain't messing around. There's a World Series championship, or at least a definite potential World Series championship coming up here real soon.
How good are they?
They're pretty good, bro. They're pretty good. I mean, at the end of the day, man, if you look at that lineup up and down, you know, you're seeing young studs all over the place. I mean, you heard what Pete Alonso said. He said, give Francisco Lindor $400 million, right? I mean, the guy's totally worth that. Look at what he's done already in spring training for them. He has changed the culture. He is changing the mentality of how people view the Mets. And when you have a reigning Cy Young Award winner like Jacob DeGrom for how many years in a row, I mean, this guy right here, on top of everybody else they have, this could be one of those years where the New York Mets make a run.
Nick Swisher joining us here in the herd. Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin. I think my only question with the Dodgers, they've clearly upgraded the rotation getting Trevor Bauer. That if you were in charge, what would you do as far as closer?
Oh, I mean, at this moment right now, maybe, I mean, you know, I think Jansen's my guy to start off the season, 100%. And then if anything falters, I'm gonna go, you know, day by day at that point. But definitely, he's my guy. He's been heart and soul.
But why? What has he done in the postseason? And again, he's a year older as well. Mm-hmm. What has he done to make you go like, okay, in October, Kenley's going to be, why would you invest this time into Kenley knowing Kenley's not going to be the guy in October?
you got to get to October 1st, right? I mean, you got to get there. You got to win enough games to get you to in the postseason anyways. Yeah, he may not be the postseason pitcher that you want, but you're going to need guys to step up in those roles in the regular season. So at least give him first crack at it. And then if it doesn't work out, I've got 161 games to find my new closer. But I think at the end of the day, you're also rocking with the overall way the locker room works. You don't need to be doing that at this moment in time. You don't need to cross that bridge until you come to it. You cross that bridge. If he struggles, then you start to figure out who your next closer is. But out of the gates, at least for myself, my opinion, he's my closer. That's the guy I'm going into with to start of the season. Until he proves me differently, that's going to be my guy.
How difficult do you think it will be for them to have the energy to go out and win 100 more games, right? They've won the division, it seems like, a billion years in a row. They finally won the World Series. Where do you get the energy to compete day in, day out when they've already done it? And there's more playoff spots now, too, so they can get in anyway.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the extra playoff spots. I love that, especially as a fan, being able to see some of our better players get a chance to crack into that postseason situation. I love that. But I think right now with where the Dodgers are, I don't necessarily think it's enough energy. I just think, look at the guys that they lost, right? Jock Peterson, Kike Hernandez, locker room guys, glue guys. You know, maybe not the most talented guys, but guys that have been part of that organization and have a role. You know, when you talk about putting together a championship caliber roster, it's not all about talent. It's about the overall community that you have inside that locker room, as well as going out there and having the potential and the talent to win. So I think for me, I think a big hurdle for the Los Angeles Dodgers this year is not talent, because they have that all over the place. It's being able to find who their new glue guys are in that locker room to help get them through the dog days of, you know, August, September, when things are kind of getting a little slow. Because a guy like Kike Hernandez, man, he seems like he'd in a locker room, he'd be one of the better teammates to be around. Jock Peterson, same thing. So I think when you lose those glue guys that have been part of your organization for so long, you're going to need guys to step up in those roles. So I think for myself, those are the question marks that I have for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Do I think right now on paper they're the clear-cut favorite to win the National League? Yes, I do. But I still think they have some hurdles to get over to accomplish that feat.
Nick Swisher, MLB on Fox, Major League Baseball analyst, of course, stud player in his own right. Are the Yankees that team in the American League?
Yeah, Yankees are pretty good, bro. They're pretty good. You know, and I feel like you hear a lot about the starting pitching for the New York Yankees and how it hasn't quite been there over the last couple of years. That's where the question mark lies with the Yankees. Offensively, 1-9, I think if you could come up with a better term than murderer's row, I think the Yankees have that this year. I mean, you got Clint Frazier, one of the stud young players in the league, hitting ninth today. So if you look at that roster, I think offensively those guys are great. Health is obviously key. If you can keep guys like, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, as well as Aaron Judge, on the field for 130 to 150 games, they're going to find themselves atop the American League East. The other question mark lies within two pitchers in my mind.
Yeah.
Corey Kluber, who's coming off of a little injury last year, as well as Jameson Taillon, same thing. And, I mean, what a great story, right? Overcomes cancer, overcomes Tommy John. He's pitching for the Pinstripes. I mean, what a story in itself. And I think Corey Kluber, his mentality fits great in that New York Yankee locker room. I also think young stud Jordan Montgomery is going to learn a lot from those guys that they brought over. Also, having Gerrit Cole as your ace doesn't hurt anything. But I think if the question marks lie within the Yankees, it's the same thing every year. How good is the starting pitching going to be, and how healthy can they stay?
He's Nick Swisher. It's the first day of Major League Baseball, right? It should be a national holiday. It's just a holiday to have you on. Swish, great stuff, dude. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, man, DG, I miss you, bro. I hope you're doing absolutely awesome, brother.
All things are good. Thanks so much. Coming up.
Coming up,
Shaka Smart's going to tell us why he left Texas for Marquette.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcast.
Check out the How We Reach coaching tool. It's a free app. You can download at reach.gov. You'll find steps everyone can take to prevent suicide. Reach for support. Reach for those who need help. Download the How We Reach app at reach.gov today. It is a prove-it year for the New York Giants. Prove it. Show it to me. Right? Everybody in the Giants is on notice. How do you know that? I mean, you got Daniel Jones, who can't stop turning the damn ball over, right? You got Saquon Barkley, who's coming off an injury. You know, he wants a new deal, I'm sure. And you got Dave Gettleman, who, you know, he hired those computer people to do the computer stuff and to do the computer things, whatever. Here's John Mara, the owner of the Giants, on the state of his team.
It's been a very difficult 4 or 5 year period for us. And, you know, I'm tired of the losing and of having the postseason press conference trying to explain what went wrong and why I think we're making progress. It's time for us to start winning some more. And that's one of the reasons we spent the money that we did.
If we want to win, we want to win now. Everybody's on notice. You know, yeah, you got a new judge is the coach, right? Like, oh, he's better than we thought. Fine. Show me. Win. John Mara's had it, right? He's like, look, I've had it. And I'll tell you what makes it worse. It's not just that they've been bad. It's not like they're in a division where everybody's been good. The Eagles have been an abject disaster over the past 2 years. 2 years ago, they made the playoffs despite the fact that Carson Wentz was bad and they were all banged up and hurt. This year, they went through a couple different quarterbacks and still could have made the playoffs. The Washington football team. They had one quarterback whose leg nearly had to be amputated, and then Colt McCoy got hurt, and then they get to the playoffs this year with Taylor Heineke at quarterback. The Cowboys just spent all kinds of money to no success over the past 2 years. And the Giants are sitting there going like, all right, like everybody says they want a gut job and start over and rebuild until you actually experience what that losing is like. And then at some point, the fans and the owners have had enough. We have reached that point with the New York Giants. You know, they asked him about a Saquon extension. He's like, we're not worried about that right now. Plus, why would they? They don't know what they want to spend. You know, the guy, he's not healthy. They don't know if, like, do you want to lock into a long-term deal with Saquon Barkley? No. I'm not sure you want. I didn't want to draft him that high a spot regardless. He's a talented player, but show me the incremental improvement of the team that aligns with his success. It's not there. You know, do they want to sign him to an extension like Aaron Jones? Maybe, but we can handle that. Remember, Aaron Jones is coming off his best year as a pro and still didn't get $10 million a year. Saquon Barkley is coming off a year where he was injured. What are you going to pay him? I don't know. We're not worried about it. We need to start winning football games. And that's fair. Let's get to Ryan Music with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Ooh, Doug.
Ooh, Ryan.
Rough times. Rough times indeed for those New York Giants. But we will stick in the NFC East for right now and move to another team that's at least seen some success. Not really. They were below 500. They just happened to make the playoffs because somebody had to win the NFC East. So the Washington football team, Doug. People were a little surprised. I know Colin Cowherd certainly was when they decided that their big offseason move was going to be Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's right. They signed Ryan Fitzpatrick to be their quarterback. Head coach Ron Rivera talked about it to the Washington Post. He said Fitzpatrick, he's going to come in as the number one, but there will be a competition at quarterback. So you signed Ryan Fitzpatrick to maybe be your starter, I guess?
Everybody says there'll be competition at a quarterback, but when one guy
makes... that's the thing. Everyone actually does say that.
When one guy makes $10 million and another guy makes like less than $1 million. One guy's been a starter in this league for like 6 different teams and the other guy has started for one team. Or two, I guess. He started for Carolina for a couple games. Yeah. Just not really.
He's never really been an actual
Yeah, and I'm sure there's part of you that goes like, well, what would it actually be like if he was an actual starter? Like, he'd have a low ceiling. He'd be fine. You know, he'd be fine. I thought what was telling was, you know, they lost to the Buccaneers in the playoffs. And, you know, look, the Bucs got the benefit of the last four games they figured out. They played bad teams. Then they played a bad team in the playoffs in the Washington football team. But I don't know if you remember this. Brady goes over to shake Heineke's hand, and Heineke's like a foot smaller than him. Right? And you can't tell as much, like, during a game.
Right.
They're like, oh, well, that's why he's a guy trying to fight his way in the league. I get it.
Yeah. Did you expect them to try and do a bigger move in this offseason as opposed to essentially settling on someone like a Ryan Fitzpatrick, given that they have so much young talent on that defense and, you know, they were able to get some other offensive?
I don't think it's crazy to think they'll draft a quarterback. Just their defensive line is good enough where they feel like they can win and win now. And, you know, Fitz is a Band-Aid for now. And then they can figure out the long-term solution in the end.
Yeah, I think the issue is a lot of times what people don't understand, Alex Smith was a great story. Alex Smith was a bad quarterback last year.
Well, I think the thing that people don't remember about Alex Smith is that Alex Smith was really, really, really athletic.
He could really
move. But you have however many umpteen surgeries on that knee, and you can't move anymore. Now, he's never had a great arm, nor has he wanted to throw the ball downfield, and you cut away his movement. Yeah, there's just limitations there.
Well, Doug, we'll turn from the Washington football team to the New England Patriots, who are continuing to try and find themselves in a world post-Tom Brady. And last year, that gave us the Cam Newton experience. There were some highs. Some people thought that they had played well at the beginning of the year. Despite low passing numbers, he had a lot of rushing touchdowns. They won a few games. Then Cam got COVID. Everything kind of fell apart. But he showed some improvement towards the end of the season. Well, Patriots owner Robert Kraft was talking about Cam Newton's campaign last season, and this is how he summarized it.
In fairness to Cam, I'm not sure he had the proper weapons around him last year, and then he got COVID, and there were a lot of things that happened, and I don't know that Jared has ever really gotten a fair shot, so we have to wait and see what happens.
So he's talking about Jared Stidham there at the end, but at the beginning you heard him talk about how maybe Cam Newton didn't get the fairest shot in terms of what he had around him and getting COVID.
I believe that the Patriots aren't done at quarterback. But what they're trying to do is build the rest of their roster without spending a ton at quarterback. How would that look with Garoppolo? I don't know, because he does make in the 20s in terms of $1 million, right? But I think they'd like to rebuild their roster with money. And then if they get a quarterback, especially like next year, not this year, next year, on a rookie deal, now you're laughing. Right? Laughing, especially if it's a non-first-round guy or a late first-round guy. It's not a ton of money. But that appears to be the plan. I can't see a way in which Cam is the solution for an entire season. He just could not throw a football. And COVID doesn't affect your shoulder. That was a problem before he got COVID.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of the Patriots were so bad in terms of skill position. And they had so much cap space this offseason, it was clear that they were out there ready to make some type of moves. And I'm sure they weren't looking at this like, well, we need to add all these offensive weapons because we really need to help Cam out. It's like, no, our offensive personnel sucks. We just need to upgrade, regardless of if it's going to be Cam Newton or Jimmy Garoppolo or whoever's playing quarterback. We can't have an aging, starting to break down Julian Edelman as our star wide receiver. That's not going to cut it for whoever's playing quarterback. So would they like to get someone better than Cam Newton? Sure, but I also think they look at it, they go, look, we were 7-9, Cam Newton was bad, he got COVID, we had to play without him, and our offensive skill position players sucked. If we can just upgrade slightly, there's
no reason we can't be in the playoffs.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but it's the idea that Cam Newton gets better, and I think it's going to get worse. By the way, Julian Edelman just tweeted out, it's a Pirates life for me, Savvy, with a little Pirates of the Caribbean gif, if you will. It is the 1st of April.
I'm guessing that's exactly what it is. Tom Brady also put out something on social media about bringing back the Montreal Expos, and he was going to be the first owner, player, manager in the history. I'm with you. I'm not a huge fan of April Fools. I do think sometimes if you're like, I think it was, remember Anthony Davis tried to do that whole like, hey, I'm shaving my unibrow like 3 or 4 years ago, but it ended up being like, I think a sponsored bit for some company. If you're doing like a sponsorship thing, like, all right, I get it, I guess. But just in general, like little April Fool's jokes, I don't really see the value in it. And finally, Doug, we'll wrap it up with this. As we've mentioned throughout the day, the big news of the day, North Carolina head coach Roy Williams retiring, calling it a career. As you had previously said, not that surprising. Some people may or may not have sort of seen this coming. For me, sort of the question out there right now would be, I think everyone's sort of wondering that the next sort of peers in that area would be a Jim Boeheim and a Coach K, and how much longer we think they'll continue to coach.
Well, I think Jim Boeheim's going to coach as long as he has his son there. One son has already announced his intent not to transfer potentially into there. My guess is Boeheim goes out with whenever he's done coaching Boeheim's at Syracuse. Coach K, I don't know. I don't think he wants to go out the way this year ended. But I don't know if there's a quick fix to get them back to the top.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting what you talked about, how much the sort of landscape and the day-to-day management of being a top college basketball coach has been like. I mean, Coach K went through this over the past 3-4 years where, you know, Duke somewhat sort of, maybe a little bit longer than 3 or 4 years, they sort of prided themselves on, we don't really do one and done. And then, like, he had to start embracing, like, oh, I need to compete with Coach Calipari and go after these top-tier talents. Otherwise, I mean, how do we expect to win games if we have less players than everyone else? And now it's not just that, but it's with the transfer portal and all of these different things. I can understand why these coaches are going, man, this is not even remotely close to the career I thought I was going to have when I started 2-3 decades.
It's really hard to build a culture when you don't know what your roster is going to look like. You know, and your roster looks completely different on September 1 than it did on April 1. It's just, it's hard.
Or even UCLA went through this. They were supposed to have one of those top players.
Dacian Nix.
Yeah, and the G League just came in and said, well, would you like a couple $100,000?
Well, he had turned down the G League previously for like $100,000. And then late in the spring when everything was shut down, they offered him like 3 or 4. And he's like, yeah, I can't turn this down. But it's a mess. And, you know, I understand that we're in this player empowerment era where, you know, yesterday was supposedly a bad day for the NCAA. Just telling you. Just because things change don't always mean they change for the better. Just remember that. Just because they change don't mean they change for the better. That's Ryan Music with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
All right, coming up next, Shaka Smart is going to join us. You remember Shaka was kind of the boy wonder head coach that took VCU from First Four to Final Four, something that UCLA, by the way, is going to do this Saturday in Indianapolis. Then he left for the University of Texas, and he had success. Even this year, they won the Big 12 tournament championship. But he didn't win an NCAA tournament game during his time there, despite winning all those games in the NCAA tournament at VCU. He left on his own volition to take the Marquette job. Why? I'll ask him. He joins us next in The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
What's up, everyone? It's me, 3-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcast.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd. He just got himself a new job. He's in a new city. He's back in the Midwest. He actually grew up in the state which he now calls home. He's Shaka Smart. Marquette head basketball coach, joining us in the Herd. Shaka, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Doug? Great to talk to you.
Likewise. All right, first and most important thing, okay? You kind of shocked the world with growing out your hair this year. I have not seen you in a couple of days. What is the current status of your hair?
Current status is I saw a barber for the first time in, I don't know, probably 20-some years the other day. But he just gave me a little trim, so I still have most of my hair.
Yeah, so you're keeping it, right? Like, I think you keep it. You look, I mean, it's if I had hair like that, I would never cut my hair. Definitely never shave it off. I don't shave my hair off now because I don't think it'll grow back.
Yeah, it's kind of day to day. My wife and daughter love to just continually make fun of me. So I don't think they'll let me cut it right now, but I'm certainly more comfortable just cutting it all off.
Okay, so how would you, if somebody was to say, hey, Shaka, what was your experience like at Texas? What would your answer be?
Great experience. Was around some terrific people, and, it's obviously an unbelievable place. Really enjoyed, the guys that we had. On the court, there was lots of twists and turns. We had some really terrific moments and big wins, and then we had some heartbreakers. Probably the most extreme thing we went through was Andrew Jones, getting leukemia and then recovering from leukemia, which is just incredible. But it was, man, I learned so much, and we were able to form some terrific relationships, and hopefully that all makes me a better coach.
You mentioned that, like, it's always the cruelness of this tournament, right? Like, you won the Big 12 tournament championship, then you lose to Abilene Christian. So all anybody remembers is the Abilene Christian. They don't remember, like, hey, just a week ago we were Big 10 tournament champions. How do you process that?
That's tough. I mean, it's really a roller coaster, and I think this year even more so because of COVID. Looking back on it, I wish I would have known a little bit more about kind of what we were getting ourselves into with the bubble in Indianapolis. We knew to some extent, but it was an interesting thing. And I also think, Doug, I don't know how you feel about this. When you win your conference tournament, there's certainly some good momentum that you're feeling, but sometimes that can work against you a little bit in the NCAA tournament. I've seen that work both ways. So, yeah, it was tough and, certainly a disappointing way to end.
Okay. Why leave and take the Marquette job? Everybody wants to ask the same question I'll ask you.
Well, there's just certain things here that, for me, are a better fit. I never want to go into disparaging in any other place or anything like that. But I think just for me personally, just made all the sense in the world and for my family. This is a basketball crazy place, as you know. The history here, the program, this is the school in a lot of ways. Basketball is a big part of what makes it go. Number two, it's smaller. It's not, as just a gigantic state university. And again, I think because of that size, you're able to specialize a little bit more on exactly what you need to do to support your guys. And then number three, I got a sense right away that, there was great alignment here from the president on down in terms of, what it takes to be a high-level basketball program.
Yeah, I mean, the story going around college basketball is that, like, top five, top three, maybe even in basketball budget. Is that accurate?
Well, I don't know what everyone else has, but all I can tell you is my experience here in being here for less than a week is that, the support is incredible, and it's, the default answer is, well, let's find a way, to make that happen. You really appreciate that, but more than the financial part is just the approach that, hey, let's get this done, let's work together on it, and how can I help?
Shaka Smart, new head coach at Marquette, joining us. Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd on Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app. Why didn't it work in the NCAA tournament when it worked so well at VCU?
Same reason as anyone else. I think, you know, sometimes there's good fortune and, you know, sometimes there's plays that don't go your way. The games that we lost, let's see.
Look, if you just take the Abilene Christian, you guys block a shot. If you secure the rebound or don't foul, you win the game. You win the game. There's a bunch of things that go. And if you win that game, we've seen it with UCLA, right? You win the first game. Now all of a sudden, like, your kids relax. You start to play.
Absolutely. And we've had, Doug, and again, I'm not complaining because we were really fortunate. Although we won most of those games by a pretty good margin when we went to the Final Four. But, you know, it takes good fortune to get to the Final Four. And then sometimes it doesn't work out your way. We literally, the game before that, same situation. We're up 2 down the stretch against Nevada. Foul got called on Mo. The game before that, Northern Iowa made a 50-foot shot to beat us in overtime. So it happens. And, you know, I think the lesson is for your team. And we always – my little brother wrote a poem about this when we were kids. It pays to win by 11. Because that kind of stuff doesn't, you know, those plays, you know, you can't really point to them if it's an 11-point win.
I like that. It pays to win by 11. Pays to win by 11. Was there, when you took the job, was there any, I need to sleep on this? Like, you're at Texas, you know, you're a year away from a new arena. They weren't firing you, right? How hard was it to ultimately walk in and tell Chris Del Conte, I'm going to take this job?
It really wasn't hard to make the decision to take the job for the reasons I mentioned. It also, as you know, I mean, there's other family or situational factors that either make it time or not time. And in this case, you know, a lot of those factors just kind of lined up for it to be time. Matt Coleman was a senior point guard for us at Texas. In a lot of ways, a lot like a son or a younger brother. Had he been a junior or underclassman, there's certain special players like that that you feel certainly aligned with or connected with. But it really at the end of the day was a slam dunk decision for my family and I.
What is it like to do what UCLA is doing, which only you guys have done before? Go from the first four to the final four.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I watched their first four game very closely. Not that I was looking past our first round game, but if we were able to win the first round game, you know, we could potentially play one of those teams. By that point, if you remember, by that point in the week, everyone was so starved for basketball because, you know, selection show was on a Sunday and that game was on a Thursday. And those of us that were in the bubble were literally stuck in a hotel 24 hours a day. So just for that game to come on TV was like, you know, awesome. So, they did a phenomenal job just kind of weathering the storms of that Michigan State game. And hanging in there, and they flat out won the game because they were the more connected team. They kind of stayed connected, and then they had two players that really played with incredible confidence, and you know had career type games in that game, and obviously have played well since. So once you get rolling, you know you get that first one under your belt, and then next one's a pretty good matchup, and you get that one. It's similar to what happened with us, and it's exciting for those guys.
Last thing, are you bringing back the Havoc?
Well, you know, I think that, number one, the game's changed to some extent. Unfortunately, the adjustments in officiating, I think, have hurt pressing to some extent. I think if you talk to Bob Huggins or other coaches that have pressed in the past, they would tell you the same thing. The cylinder rule. is a nemesis of any type of trap, especially out on the floor, because the refs love to call that. It's kind of a little bit of an out for them. So I don't know that 40 minutes of pressing makes sense, particularly in a, you know, in a top five league where the guards are on most nights going to be really, really good. But to be honest with you, havoc for us at VCU, it was so much more about our mentality and the approach we took than necessarily what exact, you know, defense we were in. And we did press on pretty much every possession. So that was a big part of it. But I think we turned teams over more in the half court than we did in the full court. But defensively, the goal is to stop the other team, you know, not necessarily to turn them over. And so actually some of our teams at Texas were better on defense than some of the VCU teams.
All right. Well, listen, I thought there were plenty of fouls in that ACU game. We can talk about probably off air. You'd like to vent in regards to officiating, but we vote havoc and we vote for the hair. At least we get one or two. Shaka, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you, man. I got a ton of respect for what you do and, you know, appreciate the way that you uplift the sport.
Thanks. That's Shaka Smart. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is The Herd.